Moncrief on News Talk
with the Dacia Duster. Shockingly affordable, and now with 3 months deferred payments too.
Time for Tell Me Why with Graham Findlay. Today's question for Graham is this. Is building houses on the sea a viable option given climate change? Graham, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
What did this arise from?
I think that the person who's the questioner has probably been watching Waterworld, given that his second question was about why we don't have webbed feet. So,
right.
And I believe Kevin Costner's character in the much praised Waterworld, had webbed feet and gills and was living in a world where everything, sea level rise had been something like 7,500 feet. So everything was underwater, right? Now, we're not looking at that, but we do all know basically at this point that there will be considerable sea level rise, and even a little bit of sea level rise will inundate most of the towns and especially the big cities of the world because they're all built on water. So there is this real interest in floating houses. And indeed, people have been making floating houses, but especially stilt houses, for millennia. The crannogs of early Ireland, right, and Scotland and Wales, were often artificial islands built out of timber in the middle of lakes or rivers where people could sort of retreat. And there's some have been recreated in various places in Ireland as well. But proper floating houses and villages are somewhat scarcer. Probably the best known ancient one or older one is the people who live on Lake Titicaca in Peru, who have particularly strong reeds in their vicinity. And so they've built sort of little islands out of reeds to float on, and they seem quite pleased with themselves. There are also some floating villages, which are often found in slums. Often these stilt villages and floating villages are in the poorer parts of these megacities. In a poor part of Lagos, where they actually eventually had a really innovative, but then unfortunately destroyed, floating school, which was a properly floating school. Right, or the Aberdeen village, which is off the coast of Hong Kong, which was a poor group who moved in and live almost entirely on boats. So they're not that common, but people are looking increasingly into it because of water's just incredible power to destroy everything and to get in anywhere, as anybody who's been flooded knows. You just can't stop water from going where it wants to go. And so instead of erecting huge walls, people said, let's work with the water and have a house which, or even a city, which goes up and down as the water does.
Right. Okay. But I know people are probably already texting us in. Isn't a house on the water a boat?
Yes. Well, yeah. Sure. And, yep. And in fact, boats are, the traditional way of living on the water.
Right? Yes.
And a lot of the people who are into this kind of thing have initially thought about cruise liners, right? But even if we just focus on actual floating houses and cities which look like our kind of houses and cities, there's been a huge amount of interest ever since the 50s and 60s, especially in places like Japan, where they had huge population pressure in the cities, to build whole cities in, say, Tokyo Bay, right? So stuff which is shaped differently from a boat and maybe is taller than a boat, and has a more of a sort of permanent, ongoing lived reality as a city than a cruise ship would, right? Now none of these really came to pass, but they were quite extensive. The Dutch in particular, not surprisingly, given their vulnerability to flooding, their own population pressures, and the fact that the whole country is under cultivation, which makes it the second biggest exporter of food, possibly in the world, which is kind of incredible if you know the size of the Netherlands. But they've explored both floating cities and floating houses and floating farms. And so there's a floating farm in Rotterdam, which has 35 cows and produces 1,000 or 700 liters of milk a day or something like that. It's all sort of farmed largely by robots and is all super green and harnesses in a sustainable way all of the different outputs, shall we put this, of the cows, except for the methane. I'm not sure they're quite so good at that. This may be the future, but loads of people are looking into properly floating houses, because the technologies can be quite various. There's, pontoon style houses in cities which they're actually floating on a platform. And then there are these semi-submersible things like oil platforms, which might be better at coping with the kind of ocean conditions. Because one of the problems, one of the parts of the question was, could we build them out in the ocean? And that brings with it a whole new set of problems. I mean, not just flooding, but just massive waves and wind and so forth. And that's been the basis of a lot of sort of utopian or libertarian fantasies, which are being produced by the Seasteading Project, who don't just want to build floating houses, and some of them are absolutely lovely, which you can put in the ports of Amsterdam or the Thames or whatever, but they want to build whole communities outside the jurisdiction of any existing state. So that they can live exactly how they want to, which turns out not to pay any tax or follow any regulations whatsoever. And while the UN is really big on these floating cities as a way of coping with climate refugees or, possibly sustainability issues, most of these people view it, as somebody said, as a floating gated community, basically, where you can just be rich in peace and nobody can tell you otherwise.
But I one assumes that it would probably be the latter, given the enormous expense this require.
These are very, very expensive. So Oceanic City is probably the leading candidate, and a lot of these are in Southeast Asia. So a lot of the floating communities of the world are actually found in Southeast Asia anyway, but in the sort of Pacific, so whether it's Tahiti and French Polynesia, that seems to be where people are going. And especially these seasteading types, because, first of all, these are sort of semi-pliant nations, because nations actually, it turns out, historically have not really liked independent countries setting up just outside their territorial limits. And in fact, that's sort of bedeviled things thus far. So they had permission from French Polynesia to start on this city, but then politics being what it is, the government changed and the new government wasn't quite so keen. But the reason they chose that was it was outside a hurricane path, most hurricane paths, which has been real trouble for some of the stilt cities like Stiltsville in Florida on the east coast of the United States. But things you have to, if you go on their website, things you have to worry about, of course, are pirates, right? So what happens if you don't have a sovereign government looking after you? And one of the dangers is pirates notice that, and notice that you don't have an army, and so might take advantage of you. But they downplay the pirate threat. The big libertarian thing for them is one of the cool things about one of these things which is proposed, which is that they're modular. And so the thing with a floating city, you could have all these little component parts, all these platforms, and they've found floating concrete platforms in the Netherlands, which just sounds like a contradiction in terms.
Yeah.
But in fact, they work. And so you could rearrange the city to suit. Like, you want more wind, you want more air, open up the city, right? Mm. If you want to bring it back in so you can conserve the heat, push all those things together. You can reconfigure them if you don't like the way the city's working out. You can add to it if you have tourists in town or refugees you're trying to house. If they run out of usefulness, you put them on a truck or tow them to some place where they can be used. And this has been done with, again, a lot of this is being devoted to the world's poorest communities, even though most of the attention is on the rich people. So they have floating schools, which are pontoon schools, which have been used quite successfully in Bangladesh, where flooding is a very serious problem for poor communities. And again, if for whatever reason they don't work out, you can drag it to another place. And in fact, a lot of these things try to recycle containers, plastic containers, which are easily found in these areas. The school in Lagos was on empty plastic drums. And the platform was fine. It was the upper parts of the school which fell in. And a lot of the other houses and also these floating schools were on lots and lots and lots of used drinks bottles of some kind, water bottles and things like that. So there is a lot of potential here. The sea problem is the big open sea problem is maybe the biggest one. And again, this is because countries really don't like it. The most famous early one was Sealand, the Princesy wasn't a democracy, it wasn't a libertarian paradise, it was a principality of Sealand, which a pirate radio host set up on an oil platform, which he thinks is, or is actually an anti-aircraft platform, outside of British territorial waters.
Indeed, we interviewed him some years ago.
Yeah, I figured you would have. Yeah. So they have a king, right? But here's the consolation. If you sign up to Sealand, you get to be a lord or a lady.
Cool.
So everybody's in the aristocracy in Sealand. Yeah. But anyway, Britain has not acknowledged this for some reason. And a couple who were living on one outside of Thailand's sort of territorial waters are now threatened with the death penalty for compromising Thai sovereignty, which apparently the Thai Navy takes very seriously.
Wow.
So we're a long ways off from the sort of libertarian paradise which people like Peter Thiel have imagined.
As a strategy to mitigate climate change, are people looking at the idea that there are parts of the world, I mean, you kind of alluded to it a bit with the schools and the like, there are parts of the world, say cities, New Orleans, for instance, can't keep the water back forever, but could it adapt to that by having more accommodation on the water, given that the water is encroaching into the city?
This actually is one of the most interesting cases, because while they haven't really explored going on the water, because the hurricanes which hit New Orleans are pretty serious, and the levees, we all know what happened to the levees in Hurricane Katrina. You know, so yes, I mean there's tremendous potential for using this water area, this blue space as they call it, for services and even housing for the poor. But in New Orleans, which is the most interesting case, they already had their houses on stilts because of, you know, the flooding was already pretty bad, but they weren't high enough to really protect them. And so an architect has developed amphibious foundations, which, again, the government is kind of pushing back against. And you can't get flood insurance if you have an amphibious foundation.
Hmm.
But this is a house which is like the ones in the Netherlands, but, you know, tethered to a pole. So if it goes up and down, it doesn't float down the street.
Right.
But it's got, you know, what she's doing is she's affixing sort of a steel frame with foam floats underneath the house. And when the floodwaters come, the house just rises up. And then when the flood goes away, it goes back down. And it seems like it works. It's cheaper than permanently putting them higher. And again, as floods get worse and worse, you know, how high are your stills going to have to be? So that's something which can be done for poor people, because these are not wealthy parts of New Orleans, which are suffering from flooding. And it has a lot of promise. But the government in the United States is very, very resistant to, you know, allowing people to get cheap priced flood insurance, which you need if you live in New Orleans, this technology is really encountering a lot of resistance, even as it's actually been quite well tested in the Netherlands, which doesn't have New Orleans's problems, to be fair.
Yeah, it's a fascinating subject. We look forward to more on that. Graham, thanks a million for talking to us today. Graham Finlay there. If you have a question for Graham, you can, as ever, send it in to afternoon@newstalk.com.
Moncrief on News Talk
with the Dacia range. Drive away today with no payments for the first 3 months.